We're backstage at the Elevate Festival, and I have managed to grab Vandana Shiva for another few moments of your time. You're a very busy woman at the moment.
Well, all of us are when we come to Elevate.
Last year you were here on the big screen, Skyping in. You're here physical, so everybody obviously wants a piece of your expertise now. As we were talking about before, there's a lot of detractors. There's also, I was doing some research, I was Googling you, I was thinking, wow, this is crazy. How am I going to work out what is fact and fiction in all of these documents? Because you've got scientists here who are saying certain things. Then when I read further, they've just been outed as being connected with some of the big organizations.
Absolutely.
What happened there?
Well, there's a Dr. Folter who immediately, when a science piece comes out in an independent scientific journal, or a country makes a decision about banning GMOs, he is among the few who immediately pounces and has pieces on a website, as well as speeches all over the place. Turns out, and he always insisted he works as an independent scientist, a freedom of information request to the University of Florida, where he works, put out all the email. The email correspondence shows A, that Monsanto did pay him for what they call outreach, to go around and say these things. But even more significant, a PR company of Monsanto wrote his speeches, wrote his responses, does everything for his website. So he's merely a name, he's a mask for what is really a Monsanto outfit. There's a Cornell Science Communication Center created totally 2 years ago only, Gates Foundation. All its job is to put out misinformation out there. Now, how does all this work? It works because there is science showing we must assess the impact. We knew this from the late 80s, which is why in the Convention on Biological Diversity, which is a UN treaty to protect species, there's a clause for biosafety, and I was appointed by the United Nations as an expert, as a scientific expert, to develop the framework for what a biosafety treaty would look like. Biosafety is the scientific term for assessing the impact of GMOs.
Now, I understand that I was shocked a little bit by a recent article on carbon nanotubes that don't seem to be the kind that exist naturally in nature, being found in the lungs of our children. And, I'm starting to think, because I'm one of the biggest advocates of, I want my hoverboard, I want my jetpack kind of now, providing it's a nice green fuel jetpack. And so I'm always wanting to push forward and strive forward and push forward and strive forward. But here's me thinking, how do we know we're not going to make some kind of weird cataclysmic mutation?
Which is why we are intelligent enough as a species to do assessments before we release and commercialize anything, a nanoparticle, nanotechnologies, synthetic biologies, genetically engineered organism. Human beings have the capacity to assess that impact. On the GMO question, as I said, the capacity is biosafety. Corporations want to run under the radar. That's why they're very troubled that there is a UN treaty. They're very troubled that people like us have done the scientific work to assess the impact on microorganisms. We are seeing microorganisms die, to assess the impact on pollinators. There are scientists who assess the impact on our body. Now, as you're saying, children having nanocarbon tubes and having asthma, it's now being found that our gut is a very rich ecosystem. It's being called the microbiome. It is full of beneficial bacteria, which, as long as they are functioning, send triggers to our brain, create the molecules that become neurotransmitters, are the ones that manage the entire metabolism of our body. The damage to this bacteria is now being recognized in cutting-edge neuroscience to be a reason for increasing neurological problems. Now, good science would not pounce and say, that's not science. Good science would say, let's investigate more.
So what's the thinking behind Scotland and their total clamped down on, just they just said no to GMO.
Well, this, the country that has planted GMOs the longest time is the United States. Why do they have GMOs? Because they deregulated. President Bush, Senior President Bush, came out after the Earth Summit and said, I will not regulate GMOs, and they cooked up an unscientific assumption called substantial equivalence. Pretend a GMO is like a non-GMO. In Europe, things went differently. So Scotland, but also about two-thirds of the countries in Europe have banned GMOs. 3rd of October was the deadline set, and most countries are saying no. England, sadly, is going in a different way, and England tried to dismantle the biosafety laws of Europe because they worked at the European level. And now they've been pushed down to the national level. Why are countries saying this? Because there is evidence of harm, and there are three kinds of harm. The first harm is to the environment, to species. We know monarch butterflies being killed by GMOs, especially Roundup Ready corn and soya. We know beneficial organisms are dying. There are health impacts. Independent research in Europe has shown those health impacts. Monsanto has hounded every one of those scientists. Very often government scientists like Arpad Puzzai in UK, who then went back to Hungary and said, I left the Soviet Union for freedom. I'm going back to Hungary for freedom. Because if they can shut a lab that does good work, that does it on government funding, then something has gone wrong with the kind of pressure corporations can implement on science. So we are really talking about a very, very serious crisis where those who talk the word science most are preventing the practice of science, are preventing the research, are trying to prevent governments from taking decisions according to the will of their people, and safety concerns. In the United States, there's right now an attempt to pass a law that would prevent labeling. It's called the DARC Act, the denial to Americans of the right to know. So if there are GMOs in some countries, it's because either the laws were subverted or illegally GMOs were introduced. And that was the case for India, the BT cotton. I had to sue Monsanto. But most countries which have the freedom and the responsibility are banning them. And they're banning them on scientific grounds.
One of the arguments I read was that it's not possible for us to grow enough food for the planet unless we start genetically modifying.
Well, nothing could be further from the truth. First, there are only four crops that are genetically engineered: corn, soya, canola, cotton. The two traits in these are toxic traits. You put a BT toxin into it or Roundup resistant gene into it. These do not change the yield of a plant, which comes from the original planting material. Second, 90% of the GM corn and soya is going for biofuel to drive cars and animal feed to torture animals. This is not a food system. It's taking food away from people. It's taking land away from people. It's taking diversity away from people. So it's a recipe for hunger. Argentina, which had a standard of living as high as Europe, after the GMO soya took over, half of the Argentinians stand in queue in soup kitchens. Their food system has been destroyed. So, you know, as I always say, there are really two things at work today. There's real science and the practice of democracy. And on the other hand, there is a giant propaganda machinery pretending to be science and destroying democracy. Now, on that, there's this one sentence: we feed the world, we feed the world, GMOs feed the world. Look at the evidence. Wherever there are GMOs, there's a crisis. In India, Monsanto's takeover of our cotton seed supply through its BT cotton triggered debt of a scale our farmers have never known. And today, the figure is 300,000 farmers have committed suicide. Most of these farmers are in the cotton belt where Monsanto has a monopoly. We are talking of a very severe ecological crisis and economic crisis, and for the ordinary person who thinks this is not related to them, a huge health crisis. The reason in America now people want labeling is mothers are finding their children are having new allergies. Their mothers are finding their kids have leaky gut. More and more mothers are finding their children have autism. Autism used to be 1 in 100,000 in the US a few decades ago. Jumped to 1 in 65. 2 years ago, it was 1 in 35, according to the graph that is rising at an exponential level. It's like that hockey stick graph of climate change and parts per million in the atmosphere. 1 in 2 American kids is going to be autistic. Shouldn't we be...
1 in 2?
1 in 2. Shouldn't we be investigating, A, what are the causes? Which kinds of children with what kind of diet get autistic? What are the children who are free of autism? That's the way they want to avoid labelling.
It's not difficult to believe that this is all, or kind of comes to the conclusion this is profit-driven.
Only profit-driven, but not just profit-driven. You know, others make profit too, but they do it with a sense of responsibility. Mm-hmm. This is profit-driven with absolute irresponsibility to present and future generation.
No cases where genetically modifying food has been a good thing.
So far not. Like I said, there are two traits, herbicide tolerance and BT toxin. Both of them increase toxins. The BT, which is supposed to control pests, fails to control pests. Mm-hmm. There are epidemics of white flies knocking out the cotton crop in India right now. And this is scientifically established. You've added a gene to produce a toxin, doesn't belong to the plant. The entire metabolism of the plant is focused on producing this toxin, so it's failing to do its normal work, therefore becomes more vulnerable to pests. And now they're super pests. Herbicide-tolerant crops, Roundup Ready crops. Half of the farmland of the United States is overtaken by super weeds. It's not a smart technology.
How did the farm vineyard we saw today, how did that manage? Because it did look labor intensive. He looked like he was doing very well out of it, you know, new yoga house and a swimming pool, but he wasn't using any chemicals at all, but he seemed to just have this connection with the land. Can you explain what he was doing?
What he was doing is what any good farmer should be doing and what every good farmer did till there were surpluses of chemicals left after the war. And the war industry said, why not apply this to agriculture? Take the chemicals, take the factories that made explosives, start making synthetic fertilizer, take the pesticides, take the poisons used, and poison gas, nerve gases, concentration camps, develop them further, turn them into pesticides. Agent Orange, used in Vietnam War, turn it into a herbicide. And now, genetically engineer crops to be resistant to 2,4-D, an ingredient of Agent Orange. It's happening right now. It's been approved in the United States. What the farmer we visited, the beautiful vineyard, is the kind of farm we have in Navdhania, and I hope some of your listeners will Google Navdhania, NAVDNYA.org, which means 9 seeds. I protect diversity, but most importantly, I protect the freedom of the seed from the patenting, as well as the genetic engineering.
Patterning seeds, this is a joke.
And you know, I was at a meeting in 1987 where the corporation said it so clearly. The reason we have to do genetic engineering is because now we can pretend we made the seed, we are inventors, and treat seed as our invention and take a patent, and our future profits will come from royalties. And if every farmer is forced to buy seed every year, every season, everywhere in the world, that's what's going to be our future wealth. That's what Monsanto is seeking.
I wish I knew more about this so that I could challenge you on a harder level, because your argument is too strong for me to find any chinks in it.
But because it's not because of
knowledge, because of common sense. Yeah. It seems to me, as an individual who, first off, on a very selfish level, would like to protect my body and my family, their health. But on the whole, I was born on, you know, effectively on a farm and brought up on farms, and all farmers ever used to do was to kind of work with the land, the rotation, which we don't seem to have to do anymore, and all this kind of stuff, resting the land and resting the ground. So I can kind of see that, because the profit for the farmer on the ground has been squeezed out and out and out, shortcuts are always looked for, shortcuts are always needed, and these seem to be like, this is the golden ticket to actually making a profit this year.
Yes, farmers have been sold silver bullets. except
that's the silver
goes to the corporations and the bullet goes to the farmer in terms of making their life unviable. But it's not just me, entire United Nations system, United Nations Environment Programme, Food and Agriculture Programme, IASDD, which is a big international assessment of agriculture. Every assessment is showing that ecological agriculture, which follows the law of nature, is the only kind of agriculture that can increase food production while protecting our beautiful planet.
What can I do?
What you can do is, first of all, if you can have a little garden. I mean, after all, let's not forget that during the time of war, it was the victory gardens that saw countries through. If we could have victory gardens then, why can't we have victory gardens today when there's a war against the planet? This will be the answer. But more than that, I think everyone owes it to themselves and their children, no matter where you are, to say, I'm going to look for an organic farmer. And if I can't directly connect to an organic farmer, I'm going to look for an organization, a community that can connect me to one. If we do not bypass this poison system, if we do not bypass the system which is not just killing our health, but is also killing the planet, 75% of the destruction of the planet, soil, water, biodiversity, comes from industrial agriculture. 40% of the greenhouse gases that are destroying our climate come from industrial globalized agriculture. Organic farming is the single biggest solution to climate havoc, single biggest solution to drought and the water crisis, single biggest solution to the fact that 1 billion people go hungry and 2 billion are sick because of food. All of that gets solved when we learn to work according to the laws of ecology, which are the highest scientific laws, which are also the laws of how our body and health is maintained. And we stop allowing lies to be told by those who make profits by selling poisons and start healing the planet, healing ourselves, and healing society.
Give me two links. Give me a link to the things you are doing and give me another link to another organization where people can find more information.
Well, the two websites which people could go to find simple things they can be engaged in, courses that we offer, ways to become more familiar with how to do better agriculture and produce better food and more food. Navdania.org, Navdania, NAVDNYA.org, and seedfreedom.info, which is the world's largest network for the defense of seed, its diversity, and good food that comes from good seed. My own website is vandanashiva.com. And for those who would like to know more about agriculture and eating well, I think one very, very good source would be Gene Watch, which is a UK group keeping watch on what's happening with genetic engineering, as well as the movement among the Greens, who have a very strong food revolution campaign going.
Vandana Shiva, thank you very much for your time. Enjoy the rest of the Elevate Festival.
Thank you.